Howdy do, buggeroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, November 8th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Okie dokie.
Guess who's still obsessed with Mario Kart? Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, this is the fake John. The real John couldn't be here.
I am skeptical of this claim.
Oh, God.
And everyone will find out why in a minute. What I actually want to do today...
It's going to be one of those shows, isn't it?
You brought this on yourself, Charlotte. You showed up knowing I was going to have John on. You both brought this on yourselves, and I hope that both of you remember that as we continue. And actually, Charlotte, we want to start with you, and we want to talk a little bit about fake news.
But do we? Do we really?
Well, a little bit.
Yeah. No, we do, because Andrew wrote up a quite interesting story. He linked to really a survey that looked like it came out at the University of Texas. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they found that 44% selected headlines that... basically, people saw headlines and thought that if they agreed with it, it was true. And they only 44% got if it was right or wrong. They were completely influenced by their own political leanings. And they just couldn't identify what was fake or not because they were so influenced by their political leanings. Which is... I'm totally unsurprised.
One of the sentences that astounded me in the article was that they said the headlines conforming to their pre-existing beliefs were true, regardless of whether the article was flagged as potentially fake. So yeah. They were given, in some cases, they were given a heads up, look, this article might be fake. Do you believe it? And they said, yeah, I believe it.
Because it conformed with their beliefs, exactly.
Right.
We are totally... Right. Totally influenced by our pre-existing bias, and this is important. We've got, we've got elections coming up in the UK, elections going up in the US. This stuff is coming out online the whole time. We've got to be more self-critical and more self-aware of it. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, Kelly, but I wrote a book on this subject.
Maybe once or twice.
I bought.
Thank you, yeah. John. But I'm teasing slightly, but of course, one of the key points that I raise in this book, and I think what this survey really underlines and this study really underlines, is the need for media literacy and how important that is. But also, I'll throw this out to you two. Do we think this just underlines just how badly the social media networks are doing with handling this stuff? Or do you guys think it's a totally different issue?
Why not both?
I can tell you a story that relates to that. I remember when I was in seventh grade, my history teacher just about virtually required us to subscribe to Time magazine. And he said, if you're going to have intelligent discussions in this class, you need to be informed. And to be informed, you need to be a reputable source about what's going on in the world. And so I strongly urge you to subscribe to Time. This was a long time ago when it was in print, paper print. I mean, it still is. I don't know.
It's not.
And so I think the notion there was figure out what's an authoritative source is, do your homework and be prepared to talk intelligently about facts and evidence that you have accumulated through reading trusted sources. I don't think that happens so much today. I think people get onto Facebook and they just go with the flow and assume that it's trustworthy. And that everything they read is trustworthy.
So I don't know if it's that. I think the thing, it's interesting you mentioned Facebook specifically, because the issue particularly with Facebook is that we think it's friends, you know.
Yeah.
It uses the term friends, and we think, oh, our friends and by extension family are going to tell us things that are true. If it's someone we trusted telling us, the news they're telling us must be true. So I think that is quite an important part of it. So I think that does have an influence as well, given that you pick the particular thing on Facebook. But mm-hmm. It also, you know, it comes back to this thing about advertising. Facebook has itself said we're not going to push back on false claims by politicians. It deals with falsity, I think, in other kinds of advertising, but it's kept clear of it in politics. Obviously, Twitter, we know, said we're going to have no paid-for political advertising at all.
Mm-hmm. Which is not helping, by the way, because it was never, in my estimation, it was never the political ads on Twitter that are labeled as advertisements that are the issue that people have with how misinformation is being distributed on Twitter. And yet everybody was all excited that Twitter finally did something.
So I think that's slightly unfair.
Okay.
I think not completely unfair, but like a little bit unfair.
Okay.
Because you're right that it's easy to spread rubbish on Twitter without paying for it. A lot easier than it is to do it on Facebook. I think the point about, and you're right to point out that for Twitter it was an easy win. It had a tiny part of the kind of political advertising market. It's like it was an easy win, basically. So I think you're totally right to make that point. But that doesn't mean it was not the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
In and of itself.
Right.
Just because it was easy doesn't mean it was not right.
Right. It was a smart thing of them to do, but they were getting a lot of undue credit for it because it wasn't like they're making some sort of huge sacrifice because it was never a lot of money. And it still doesn't address the fundamental issue of misinformation being distributed via Twitter.
I think it has to do with the relative power of the two organizations. I think Twitter saw that they were under pressure from Washington and figured out that it was going to be a bigger payoff for them to go with the flow of Washington and to do something positive. Whereas Facebook is so wealthy and so big and so powerful, they can do whatever they want to do.
Mm-hmm. The thing that is interesting to me in all of this is that Google will take these ads that are factually untrue, and Google isn't saying anything about it. Everybody's mad about it happening on Facebook, but nobody's talking about it being Google. So you do have to be kind of skeptical of all of this. Like we've talked about some of this before from a security standpoint, as far as like phishing and different sorts of things that can try to present information to you as legitimate information. You know, you get a phone call that there's a virus on your computer, or you know, whatever it might be. Like we talk about this sometimes with relation to robocalls or with these emails you get that look like they might be legit that actually are not. And the thing we have to think about is April Fool's Day. You know, when you read everything on April 1st, everybody kind of looks at it and goes, really? I'm not entirely convinced that this is true. And I feel like we need to keep April Fool's Day in our hearts all year long.
Along with curating trusted, reliable resources, which you have to really kind of work at and cultivate.
Right.
It's an art. You have to sort of create your own personal set of trusted sources.
Right. Like, but then you also have to make sure that those sources aren't promoting some particular agenda or doing something obviously biased or continuing to repeat provably false information. So, and that's kind of the hard part, is like being able to put faith in some other organization to get it right, or if they get it wrong, be transparent about having made that mistake and then correcting it.
Another thing that happens a lot is we're in a very technical society, and a lot of the things that we use and do in our life and our work and our phones and our work in the workplace have a technical basis. Mm-hmm. And if you're involved in some of those technical enterprises, you have some sort of understanding of what goes on behind the scenes. You have a glimmer of how an iPhone works. You have a glimmer of how the internet works and how GPS system works. But there's so many people who do not have any experience like that. They don't have any idea how a phone works. They work in a non-technical field. And so for them, they have no basis for that. A good example is when I was watching the news about some space event. You know, I worked in aerospace for a long time, and this mm-hmm. news piece was just full of errors and simplifications, and I thought, they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Because if you have background in your life, you can bring to bear some personal experience to bring judgment and do qualification.
The pushback to that, and I don't necessarily disagree with you, but that actually goes back to the point that this survey found, is that we're all totally influenced by our own beliefs and, you know, by extension experience. And actually, sometimes you need to step back and just look at maybe the evidence in a more neutral way. And I think that's mm-hmm. what we are all struggling with at the moment. And social media and technology is particularly good at keeping us in our, as we all know, at keeping us in our little echo chambers. So I am totally unsurprised that people believe things that aligned with their beliefs, because you have that in, think of the people you are friends with on Facebook, the Facebook groups you're in, the blogs you subscribe and read to, the Twitter accounts you follow, and on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
We all build our little echo chambers around ourselves. However enlightened and we think we are, we do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, that's what we get in our head is correct, and those are the facts.
I don't do that, Charlotte.
And then as soon as, yes, but John, you're a robot, it's different.
I don't build an echo chamber. I follow writers I respect on Twitter, and I try to get as many opinions about things as I can and weigh the different points.
It's because you're a robot.
Charlotte, we discussed this. We don't tell him that.
This could be or could be not true.
But no, but lots of people.
It's not perhaps Schrodinger's news, John.
but I think the point is we all have these lots of people have the same things reiterated to them constantly. Mm-hmm. And therefore, when you see it presented to you, even if you're told it might be fake,
mm-hmm.
you believe it. And so I'm totally unsurprised by this. I'm glad Andrew flagged it up on the site.
Yes.
The word we haven't used yet during this show is what's called confirmation bias.
Correct. It mm-hmm. is absolutely confirmation bias.
Yeah. So be skeptical of that stuff and don't end up.
Well, there's a deeper issue there. Confirmation bias comes from a need for self-respect and self-esteem. To know and to feel that other people support your belief is comforting in an egocentric kind of way. To mm-hmm. feel that you have to go on your own and discard the beliefs of people you respect or discard the mainstream is a very idiosyncratic thing to do.
And also, it takes
like, a lot of strength of character and stubbornness and idiosyncratic loneliness.
Right, and you're totally right. And by extension, it's also hard to admit that you have changed your opinion and might be wrong.
Right.
That's why scientists are so good at that, avoiding confirmation bias, because they know
never
how
confirm
to
anything.
Go their own way. They know how to test and they don't jump to conclusions. And
but is that your own confirmation bias as a scientist?
Oh no.
Well, yeah, before we all turn into Chidi on The Good Place and can't decide on anything, I'm going to go ahead and
oh, nice one.
I don't know what just happened.
It's okay.
Chidi,
we'll talk about it later.
Place. I love it.
I thought you might. I want to talk to John a little bit about a different topic. John, we're sort of getting a sneak peek at particle debris this week because you're going to talk to us about an article that you read about MacBooks.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be the lead or not, but it was one of those articles where you say, you know, the author has really kind of pulled back the veil and said the emperor has no clothes. And it has to do with the quality of MacBooks and the quality of macOS, as an aside. Charlie Sorrell at Cult of Mac kind of just lays it all out there in a kind of blunt way about problems with Apple's having with the quality of their MacBooks. And he said, you know, there's no way I'd switch to a MacBook right now. It used to be reliable, well-designed, and long-lasting. And so he kind of goes down through the litany of issues of the current MacBooks, MacBook Pros and Airs. The butterfly keyboard, we know from rumors that Apple's going to switch all their MacBooks back to Scissors keyboards away from Butterfly in 2020. The port issue, never enough ports, always having to use dongles. Apple could have put one USB-A port on their MacBooks for convenience, for security, for backup, you know, just in case you're in a bind. But probably John and I wouldn't have that. That's my take, not Sorrell's. And the upgradable storage and RAM on MacBook Pros, if it's a Pro device, it needs to be a little more upgradable instead of RAM soldered in. And all this leads to a sort of a lingering loss of trust in Apple. So he kind of really just puts it out there And I can confirm that the family has bought a MacBook Pro in the last year, and it already went in once for repair. The ports died. Mm-hmm. And what we're hearing about quality control and other issues with Catalina right now being one of the more difficult releases of macOS. Mm-hmm. Things are good, and things are just people, but the question is, what fraction of the people are having problems? We tend to give Apple the benefit of the doubt. You know, we're Apple consumers, we're Apple fans, we write about Apple all the time. We like the company. We agree with their stance on a lot of things. And so we tend to cut Apple a break as writers. But when a writer like Charlie Sorrell just kind of comes out and says, you know, hey, point blank, you know, we got a problem. It kind of gets you thinking.
Well, if it had been a series of hardware concerns, I could have gotten behind that. But I don't like that it doesn't have the magical combination of ports for me personally. Does not feel like a valid complaint about any computer. I don't care whether it's a MacBook or an iPad or a Dell or whatever. It doesn't matter to me. And you can howl about not being able to swap out the drive in your computer all the live long day, but clearly Apple doesn't care, because Apple has been at this for a while with not making easily upgradable machines, and that's the end of it. Well, and it's not going to change.
One of the tasks of the writer is to avoid personal preference and to try to take the temperature of the community and do enough reading, do enough talking to developers and readers to kind of size up the global situation and mm-hmm. make a technical estimate of whether it's really a problem or not.
Right. And so
happens is when they do that, then they get accused of being personalized in their writing. And I think some authors are better than other authors at getting taking the temperature of the community.
Yeah, but here's the thing he's saying. He says, so there's a section of multiple MacBook problems, because he says that they're a disaster. The word he uses is, the MacBook is a disaster. That's the headline. Whoa. So why is it a disaster? Because the butterfly keyboard is crap. We know that. They've tried to iterate with various degrees of success, because we're on the third iteration of the keyboard now. Mm-hmm. And it sucks. And you know what? That's legit. But then we get down to ports. So I don't want to have all these ports. Sorry, but that's not a problem. It's not about them failing. It's not about them destroying things that you plug into USB-C ports. It's not a concern about a problem with a computer. And upgradable storage and RAM, I want that to exist. Like, you can say that as much as you want to, but you could also say it to this tin of Bob Ross Happy Little Tree Mints on my desk, and you're going to get exactly the same result, which is diddly or squat. Possibly
both.
You're
glossing over one of his chief complaints, and that is that Apple doesn't give you enough ports. They decide that one is enough on a MacBook and two is enough on an Air. Four is hardly enough on my wife's MacBook Pro. She's got all ports plugged in all the time, and four isn't enough, really.
When were there ever more than four, though, John? Charlotte, go ahead.
No, because I've been listening to this conversation and it's fascinating, actually. But I'm going to jump, because I actually think this is one of those class things where I think there are some valid points. As you said, the butterfly keyboard stinks.
Yes.
We know it stinks. Thank you, Joanna Stern. but there's also things, I mean, for most people, I really don't think for most users, they worry loads and loads about the number of ports. And if they do, they buy a dongle. Maybe I'm mm-hmm. wrong.
Or a hub. Like, see, this is the thing, is that, John, four USB ports, like, I regularly use four USB ports. But you know what I did? I bought a hub.
Right. I also, you know, I've done the same for my Mac Mini. I've got all sorts of things coming out of it sitting here on my desk. Mm-hmm. I also think, you know, for most users, they would never think about upgrading RAM or memory or, you know, store, those kind of things.
Right.
And most people do not. The thing most people like about an Apple computer is that you take it out the box and you turn it on, and it's beautiful and perfect, and it needs no fiddling. And you plug a couple of things in, and then nice.
Well, generally, John, we're painting in broad strokes here.
Yeah, yeah, I am painting in broad strokes, and there are criticisms to be made. And I can't believe John and I have swapped roles where I'm the kind of defender and John's the cynic.
It's Freaky Friday, everybody.
It's Freaky Friday, and there's plenty of valid points that the article and John have raised. But I think you also think how most users commonly
use their devices. Well, that's the issue right there, is that Apple understands how the users use their computers. And 90%, as you said, of the customers who buy the machine are happy. They're happy to go out and buy a $50 hub or a $200 Thunderbolt dock. And they're happy to, you know, go with the flow and accept the limitations that Apple's placed on them. And they have a beautiful machine and they love it.
Okay, if you want.
But there's always 10% of the users who are going to be saying, you know, it's a pro machine, I expect more. And that's always going to be.
Okay, then get something else. Like, right. It's not like we told you there were four USB ports down the side and you open the box to surprise, there are half that number. That's happening.
Come on. Well, that's never the issue.
I understand that. But you knew what it was when you bought it. Don't buy it knowing that you only have two ports, if that's going to be such a tragedy, and then
John,
refuse the solutions that are available to you.
If you want
it's either that or Windows.
If you want a computer you can break into the back of and upgrade and build loads of ports in, buy a PC.
Mm-hmm. Hackintosh is a thing. Loads of people have them and they're very happy with them.
Or Hackintosh is a thing if you're one of those people. I appreciate I'm being slightly mischievous and I'm being... I understand that.
But it's the exact right amount. Thank you, Charlotte.
I'm being the devil's advocate, too. You know, this article gets you thinking, you know, is there some there? You know, how seriously should we take it? How much of this is really true? Do we have any evidence that people are having problems? I think there is more than we have had in the past.
Well, here's what I know is that virtually every Apple laptop that I have purchased, and that dates back to the PowerBook 1400 for people playing along at home, I have always had a couple of ports that were pointless to me for whatever reason. Like, I never, ever, ever used the DVI out on the side of my PowerBook. I didn't.
I've got three ports on the Mac Mini that I've never used.
Yeah. So, it's like, I would rather... one of the things Dave Hamilton said this morning was, now my computer can have exactly the ports that I want it to have. And that's how I feel. I don't have a two-port machine right now. I still have a 2015 MacBook Pro, early 2015 MacBook Pro. And when it's time to trade this sucker in, I'm going to continue using the hub I use now. And that's the thing that nobody's talking about is, like, yes, maybe a high quality Thunderbolt dock is spendy, but maybe you bought it a couple years ago. And now when you get a new computer, you can just plug it into that one and it's going to be great. And a lot of that stuff can carry forward. And so, like, just because you make that investment, this isn't like an iPhone case. I bought a $200 iPhone case and now my new iPhone is a different size and now this case is useless to me. It's not how this works. So that's part of why I take issue with this article, is because I'm going to use three big examples here, and of those three examples, two of them are, I don't like this, and therefore I'm declaring the MacBook a disaster. Now, if you think it's too much money, because...
Which I'll agree with you.
Right. If you think it's too much money because there is no upgrade path, and that makes it very expensive when you outgrow your storage or you outgrow your memory, then I understand if you want to make that complaint. And that complaint would be far more valid than, I want to and I can't, and therefore this computer is unsuccessful. Because that's clearly not the case. And that's the part that I take issue with.
That's why I tell people, never buy a MacBook Pro with less than the max amount of memory it'll hold.
Right.
Day one.
Yeah. That's what I always tell people. That's what I've said forever. Yeah. Because most people aren't going to update it themselves, and unless they're good enough friends with me that they know that they can come over here and I can bust out the fun screwdrivers and a bottle of wine and we're going to get this done, that's a very different story. But most people who talk to me about
that
computer buying
like
decisions...
That sounds like a fun evening. I'm flying to Portland for that evening.
Awesome. Bring your laptop and I'll get out the good screwdriver set. We'll have some fun.
That actually duty free. See you there.
See, cracking open laptops actually is my idea of a good time. That's part of the reason I personally am disappointed in this. But I'm not going to go on Mac Observer and go the MacBook is a disaster because I don't get to put as many mileage on as many miles on my screwdrivers as I'd prefer. That's just not a valid argument.
I think why Charlie wrote this article was to fire up people and to get this kind of discussion going, and to let us focus on how we really feel. And that's a strong affirmation. We're taught as editors to make strong affirmations in our titles. The MacBook is a disaster. It's not the MacBook may be a disaster. It's probably a disaster. The MacBook is a disaster. And that's a provocative headline and worthy of some discussion, as we just had. And I think we've had the right discussion about it.
Of course you do, John, because that means at the end that you get to say you were right about a thing.
Because it's confirmation bias that this is a great team.
I was just going to say it's John's confirmation bias because he's currently mad at a MacBook in his house. That's why this article is so happy making for him. Obviously, Charlotte and I are a little more skeptical about it. So we're definitely going to talk more about this. If you think the MacBook Pro is a disaster, if you think it's fine, if you think these arguments are valid or not, if you have a good marker for skepticism that you use when you are reading other sorts of information and things that purport to be news each and every day, then let us know about that. And you can get to us at observations@macobserver.com. You can talk to us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. I want to thank both of you for being here today. I thought we'd go out with the MacBook conversation as something a little more lighthearted, and that really didn't turn out to be the case, but here we are. Anyway, I want to thank both of you for being here. John, thank you so much for coming by.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad you're here. Also with me today, Charlotte Henry. Thank you, Charlotte.
Have a lovely weekend, people.
Bye, Charlotte.
Bye, John.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you on Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.